Hey guys, just before we get into it, we would like to acknowledge our podcast partners in Beyond Blue.
If you're feeling low, anxious, or need to talk to someone, please contact the people at Beyond Blue. Their phone number is 1300 224 636.
You can visit them on the website as well at www.beyondblue.org.au/get support. Enjoy the episode.
Thanks, guys.
AFL podcast. I'm your host John Van Norden, and here with me in person again, the big man Sean Lewis. Sean, how you doing this week, mate?
I'm doing well, mate. But I want you to redo that intro with a bit of gusto. It just felt flat.
It's not flat, mate.
It felt really flat. Come on, mate. We're in person here.
No,
just fire up.
No.
Come on.
Don't tell me how to be. I can be
this
way.
Just give me something.
Well, look, we know that some of us can be happier about the content of this episode than others, but as a Pies fan for a long period of time,
some might even say a lifetime.
I'm just not going to do it. Well, it wasn't a lifetime. So I think I switched to Essendon when I was in grade two, and then I switched to Geelong when I was in grade four, and then I switched back to Collingwood. So all bar 3 years. I've been a Collingwood supporter, but I had a fickle 3 years in primary school. So
yeah, and I think, you know, those fickle 3 years, you might have actually seen a flag if you had stuck with either of them.
Yeah, I think I was actually just flag dodging. I think I changed from Essendon because they won the flag in 2000. I think that's when it was. I didn't like all the attention.
Yeah, but you did get one in 2010. So
yeah, I got there in the end. But I mean, we're obviously doing the trade wrap episode. So we wrapped up all of the days of the trade with the exception of the final day. We forecast what we were thinking the trades would go for. So we're just going to go back and compare what happened and then talk about the hot mess that was the Pies. So it'd be good to get into. I mean, there's been some changes since then as well. So in classic AFL fashion, change the rules after the exchange period, so you can't plan for it in your trades.
Yeah, it's really, really, really helpful for AFL teams when they do that.
Super helpful. It's just like they change the bidding system as well to mean that you can stockpile points this year rather than having to keep the amount of list changes. You didn't see that one?
No, I did not see that.
Oh, yeah.
So wow. They are just...
Just for this year. So they said because list sizes changed this year, and clubs could have traded for future picks in order to, like, think...
Oh, I did see this, yeah.
So, look, it makes sense. Hopefully, there's a caveat in there that you can't take in 30 picks. It still has to be the total amount if you had 44 or whatever it was, list spots. But, hey, we'll let that go. The other rule changes, though... I'm not a fan of rule changes at the best of times. I just think that you just need to let the game settle because it always gives somebody an advantage and somebody a disadvantage when everyone's been training or planning or drafting for a particular thing. And what ends up happening is that because of the constant changes, the changes at the moment are reducing interchanges from 90 to 75. The new on-the-mark rule, which should mean there's going to be a whole lot more 50-meter penalties and less ability to defend in transition.
And we all love 50-meter penalties so much because they're such a balanced penalty in the course of the game.
I know. They're going to decide a few games with that, which is annoying. But as I said, it really dictates the way that people plan their list, and then they change the rules again. So people that were planning their lists at the time where the Pies were winning the flag back in 2010 would have been planning for lots of explosive players because you could just have as many rotations as you want. People that are planning their list now as rotations continuously drop will pick more athletic players that can stay on the ground for longer. But if they change the rules again and increase it, then all of that drafting will be for naught. Like, it'll just be drafting for the wrong system.
Yeah, well, we saw what happened with the Dogs with the third man up. Like, they had a list built on that third man up. They won a flag with it. And then, you know, they went and said, you know, no third man up. So, all of a sudden, you know, the Dogs are left high and dry without a ruckman. Now, they could have gone and got one, but, you know, that might have affected their overall build or their cash payments or whatever. It just, I mean, like, I believe that the game will eventually correct itself. So, initially, you're always going to go to defensive movement. So, these, we will see, I would think, we will see a drop in scoring off the back of these rule changes.
Yeah.
Because clubs are going to be so cautious and so defensive with them that, you know, the intended effect is null and void. Because at the end of the day, if you can stop your opponent scoring and you can score one more point than them, then you win. You know, the free and fast football that they're after, you know, that's a natural evolution.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a look consistently as they've tinkered with the rules, we see the fluctuations in the scoring. And, you know, they're talking about we want more Dusty Martin moments. And it's like, well, what do you mean by that? More one-on-one? Well, you know, if that's the case, then, you know, confine every player to a section of the ground, you get your one-on-ones that you're after.
Yeah, it was such a stupid comment to make, that Dustin Martin moments thing, because it just shows that they're not thinking about the long-term future of the game. They're thinking about how the game looks when one player plays the game what it looks like for that player. Because you remove Dusty from the competition and would you change the rules? And probably. I mean, I still think that they're intending to do the same thing, but the idea that they have this, how can we create more moments like that? Footy's good because of the struggle. I love the struggle. I love arm wrestle games where it doesn't feel like a lot is happening. I mean, there's crap games, and that's a different thing. They're generally not played by the better clubs. But
at the end of the day, if you want to improve to defeat these defensive issues, improve the bloody skills.
Yeah.
Put more money into the grassroots and developing a better elite pathway into the AFL. And we've spoken about this before in saying that, you know, typically they're only developing an elite pool of, you know, 30 players per draft who are truly going to make it. If they can get that number out to 50, which means that they have to invest in under 12s today, then, you know what, in 5 years' time, doesn't matter what the rules are, if the bare minimum is that a kid can kick 30 metres accurately on both sides of his body, and that's the 50th player pick in your draft, and it's not a rare skill to be able to do that, lo and behold, wherever the player stands on the mark, whether it's at the 45 or directly in front, doesn't actually matter, because the person can hit off both sides of their feet.
Yeah.
And you know, if you improve kids, you know, IQ, they can work their way through the zones. Their football IQ, it all comes back to fundamental training, and that's what really drives me nuts, is that all these are just superficial, because coaches are smart, they're going to figure their way around this. And you know why Dusty's good? Because he's got individual brilliance, he's got individual skill.
Yeah.
And he's got better skill than other players playing on him.
Yeah, he totally does. I mean, that's the hardest thing about this. Not the hardest thing. I mean, it's just AFL football. It's not. There's a lot harder things in life. But it's one of the stupid things about it is that they're creating a system which actually devalues skill by putting a premium on endurance and the ability to stay on the ground for long periods of time. And the ability to not concede points. So somebody like a Blitzarv's value goes up because he can play highly defensive football for long periods of time. And he can move into the midfield and play a sort of tall defensive role. So you're actually creating a system that benefits athletes rather than footballers. And you're creating a system which actually gives people like... I don't know, I've joked about this in the past, but people like me who... growing up, didn't play a whole lot of football, but man, could I run and jump and stuff. An advantage, because I could stay on the ground for a really long period of time. I could follow rules and structures and defend, but could I kick? No. And is this going to be the way to get us through? No, it's not. As you said, investment in grassroots and it changes everything because you increase the talent pool at the top. And the allowance of settling of the rules so that different teams can come up with structures and systems to beat the best team, rather than every team adjusting to the new rule, which favours the teams that are already on top.
Yeah. So, look, it's funny because, like, I look at the rule changes. I don't really have an issue with reducing the interchange caps. It doesn't you know, the interchange cap is whatever, like 75 per minute. I'm pretty sure, like, what was it? I read something, and it's like, to actually make a sizable difference to game style, it would have to be like down 60 or 50.
Yeah.
You know, like at 75, you know, players will develop enough of a tank. Current players will develop enough of a tank that it won't eliminate anyone who's currently playing football. Players standing the mark, like, you know, as long as they're in line with where they're meant to be, it doesn't matter where they bloody stand.
Yeah. Did anyone watching the game think, oh, that guy out on the 45 is, like, that's going to really affect the game?
Well, the best kicks in the AFL will still take the 45 kick.
Yeah.
So it comes back to skill again.
I mean, like, what? It's because you're protecting the corridor, potentially.
Well, that's what they're trying to do, because it's the 45 back into the corridor.
Yeah.
Where players, they come round to about 30 degrees
and,
off centre.
And want to trap them down the line, want to encourage the kick down the line. Whereas this is protecting which is fucking... Sorry for swearing. It's just stupid. Like, you are taking away initiative from the players, which is, hey, if I defend this space here, it actually improves our own team's ability. They're trying to introduce these false things which feel unnatural to stop people doing the best that they can. Like, you're introducing fake reasons for playing to the top level. I hate all of that additional restrictions.
But they're saying here, so this is the rule, players stand the mark. Defending player will only be permitted minimal movement, lateral movement on the mark. If they move off the mark in any direction but prior to play on being called, a 50-metre penalty will be applied. Like, and the teams are defensive team is unable to substitute players in the mark. So that's that rolling zone.
Yeah.
That's what it's about. But when you sit there and think about it, what they're saying is that you have to stand the mark within minimal move. So you basically, if the mark is, if you man it up and you're 5 degrees off center, so you're within that 1 meter, say, side to side, you actually can't go left or right until it's called play on. So, you know, when someone's lining up for goal and, you know, you're running in to do the mark, like, you know, where you close the gap on them to try and trick them with distance.
Yeah.
Looking at this, you have to run directly at them. You can't run from an angle. You can't run from the side.
Yeah.
So basically, if we've got a kick after the game where we've got 10 blokes standing the mark, that'll be a 50-metre penalty.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. on technicalities. And it's stupid as well, because it's going to create so many 50-metre penalties when what a player is trying to do is line themselves up between the person taking the kick and the goal. But what they'll get penalised for is because they're not in line with, like, a dead straight line down the field.
No. The line is always to the center line of the goal. It'll be someone lining up to cut off that next obvious kick,
yeah,
which is your job defensively.
Yeah, I know. It's just stupid.
And then probably the sneaky little one at the end there is the location of the marks for the kick-in. They've pushed it back another 5 meters. So it was 10 meters from the edge of the 9 meter square.
Yeah.
And now it's going back to 15. And I mean, the thought process is that extra 5 meters means you might get over a zone, but the zone just adjusts.
Yeah, just swings 5 meters further back. That's not how things work. Like, yeah.
I mean, maybe if you're lightning quick, you might be able to run through a gap in the zone and get an extra couple of meters. But
when's it going to be that the kick in gets taken from the 50-meter arc?
I don't know.
You can't touch the player taking the kick in inside the defensive 50. They can choose where they're going to kick it out, and
we just roll back the you know, the system just rolls back and it covers the issue. I mean, look, like, I'm a bit like probably most football fans and probably most listeners, and I'm not by any sense of the imagination an absolute purist in football. I think there's been some really good changes that have happened, but, you know, these little tweaks that are happening, you know, every second or third year, they are just causing havoc, because it allows no team to be settled, and it doesn't allow, you know, teams to adjust. Like, footy evolves, and it takes 5 years, 6 years for the defensive game plan to be overtaken by the offensive game plan.
Yep.
And it happens in cycles. It always has. We can't keep trying to artificially manufacture these cycles.
Yep.
It doesn't work. I mean, basketball don't adjust the rules every year just because the NBA drops from an average score of 110 to 92 one year because all of a sudden, you know, every team's great defensively. They don't adjust that rule.
No, they just people learn, okay, then we can shoot threes. We've got, that's the way to get through now. And then now that threes are being shot, okay, now this new way is the way to score and play offense, and they all adapt.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. Like, there are some teams out there in the NBA who are really good at defending the three. So then when they come up against the Rockets or the Warriors, who are high-volume three-point shooters, you know, naturally those teams score less against those. But the trade-off is, so, and Boston's one of those teams, is that, you know, they don't do well against size in the middle.
Yeah.
So, you know, when they come up against team that play, you know, big ball in the middle, with the exception of Philly, you know, generally Boston struggles. Like, big men kill us. Like, Bam Adebayo absolutely tore us a new one in the finals. So it's just a natural part of their system that you know, generally scoring is about 100. Some years it's 110. Some years it's, you know, 95.
It's rocks, paper, scissors. Like, we create a system that beats this other system but loses to this other system. And that's, you don't see any of that in footy at the moment. They're all just progressing towards the average mean.
But you flick back to 2000 and you go, well, you know, Essendon, Brisbane, you know, then we entered the defensive phase. Like, I can remember, you know, the cries in 2005 and 6 with the hugely defensive football of Sydney. You know, oh, this is, you know, it's crap for the game. It's low scoring. It's this, it's that. Some of those games were the best contests I've ever seen.
Yeah, really good grand finals, weren't they?
Yeah, and you know, they create the Leo Barry moments, not the Dustin Martin. They, you know, just as equally exciting. And you know, then you saw, you know, Clarko brought in the zone, and then we had Geelong freewheeling off the half back line, and you know, we had, you know, St Kilda and Collingwood, you know, playing, well, Collingwood playing boundaries, St Kilda, you know, playing that mobile agile game. Like, we've had evolutions in the last 20 years, but it's just like, since the Dogs won, we don't want to allow natural evolution for some reason.
Yep.
We just want to change the rules so it's high scoring. So.
Yeah, no, and scoring is not the only thing that makes the game exciting. We're going to jump into the trade review now, because we could talk on rules and the running of the system for a long time. We will try to whip through this pretty quickly as well, because I'm on a deadline, and we have already covered most of why we think the value should have been a certain way. If you didn't listen to the trade day episode, then it's still worth a listen in conjunction with this episode to see, sort of hear our thinking, but we will work our way through all of those trades. So Jeremy Cameron, it did get done. It took until the death, but our final verdict was that it would get done for 13 and 15 heading to the Giants for Cameron and 52. And the actual trade ended up being 13, 15 and 20 for Cameron and a 2021 second round, or 2021 second round picks. That's right.
Yeah.
So it's actually a little bit lower value for the Giants.
Yeah. So, I mean, when we were talking about this, I think I said, you know, if I'm the Giants, I want their top two picks.
Yep.
Turns out the Giants went, we want all their picks in the first round. But what they gave back in their 2021 second and 2021 Essendon second, which came from the Caldwell trade, effectively meant that rather than, you know, our scenario, which was had Cameron valued about pick 4 with 13, 15 to them and only 52 going back. And I think even they were offered maybe 13 and 20, maybe not 13 and 15, from what they were rumoured. Even that would have been better than what they ended up trading, because, I mean, and taking this year's positions, and John will talk through a little bit of a ladder at the end, but, you know, kind of assuming Essendon's around about, you know, 14th this year, GWS squeak into finals next year, that would be, you know, pick 22 and pick 28 without any, you know, restricted free agencies picks coming in. So if you take all that into account, 13, 15, 20 for Cameron, effectively next year's 22 and 28, it values Cameron out to pick 7 rather than our value, which was up at pick 4. So in a way, I think, John, you probably summarised it the best in saying that the Giants wanted to be able to turn around and say, we got their pick, we got their first round picks.
Yeah, we got three first round picks for Jeremy Cameron, but in doing so, they've actually cost themselves some value. Those two picks next year are going to be really valuable for the Cats.
And in fact, if Essendon don't perform, that pick could even be higher.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, 20. Yeah, it could end up sneaking higher than pick 20. You're right. Ben Brown ended up getting done as well. I think we had it as 26 for Brown and a fourth round pick, but we did say that it was going to be messy. The reason that it hadn't already been done was that there was going to be pick shuffles left, right, and center. And what ended up happening was that it was 26, 33, and a 2021 fourth, which we're projected to be about 68.
That's Brisbane Lions fourth.
That's Brisbane Lions fourth round pick. For Brown, 28. North Melbourne's 2021 fourth round pick, which is about 56, which values Ben Brown at about pick 38. So it was a really good trade for Melbourne. I mean, getting a guy who has kicked 60 goals 3 years in a row. He had an average year last year, of course, but It's a really good return for Melbourne and gives them the target that they thought they would have.
Yeah. I think, our value on our trade was pick 35. It got done for pick 38, so we weren't too far off the mark. It was a bit like what I think I said in the trade was that, you know, they want Melbourne's pick 26.
Yeah.
And they got it, which is good. I think that comes back to that philosophy of having the highest pick in the trade.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think for North, as we spoke about, they devalued their hand. You know, in this instance, you know, potentially 20 picks they've lost in value. Like, if we're talking, it's equivalent to pick 38 value. And you and I kind of said, you know, it's probably worth about pick 18. You know, that and this is what we get at. When clubs openly push players out like this, this is what happens. You cost yourself so much value. And I mean, we'll talk about it, obviously, a bit more in depth coming up, but it really, really did hurt them. They still got a reason, you know, effectively an end of second round for him. But it's certainly nothing of what they could have got had it been less controversial.
Yep, totally. I mean, we said that Tom McDonald would probably get done, but it didn't end up happening. I think it's probably a defined scenario for everybody. Tom probably swings back in 2021.
Hopefully.
Goody, if you're listening.
Don't play him on a wing. He's on inside midfield.
Yeah, he's a good key defender. Just swing him back. Oscar's gone, and it helps to settle your defense properly with some experienced players. So he can go back there and add some value. But
yep. No
trade. Similarly with Josh Dunkley, it didn't end up getting done. This was probably a bigger no trade because Essendon, and look, I say Essendon like they're a big part of this, but Dunkley announced that he had his preferred destination as Essendon and then he requested a trade. So that public announcement probably makes me believe that Essendon asked him to make that announcement. I don't think it makes sense for a player to come out and announce without the club being okay with it. But the fact that it wasn't able to get done after that is probably on Essendon not willing to pay probably what the price that they set by making someone like Dunkley say, I want to come to your club and I'm still got 2 years left on my contract.
Yeah, I mean, we said it in the podcast, I think, that, you know, it's a bit of a device of Essendon's own making in the Joe Danaher scenario. Look, the Bulldogs openly set the price for Dunkley as two first round picks by what it was told. I think Essendon came back and offered a first and a second, which, look, to be honest, is probably not far off, you know, reasonable value.
It's not far off value for Josh Dunkley neutral, like as in, in a neutral scenario, but in a scenario where he's got 2 years left on his contract.
And his contract's a good contract.
It's not a bad contract to have on your books. It's one that you want to have on your books, an undervalued player. And he's announced to the world that he wants to come to your club, which is a risk as well. When you have people come out and publicly commit, you are then beholden to get the trade done. So it increases the value as well. And they just didn't offer the value, so that trade didn't get done. I mean,
is there, okay? So here's the thing: is this enough? So this is the second year in a row this has happened. So Danaher last year with Sydney, and Papley obviously with Carlton. Now Joe Danaher has left and ended up in Brisbane, but Papley stayed. Is this with Josh Dunkley? Will players come out and nominate when they're in contract again?
Probably not. I mean, I don't think they should anyway. And I think that's probably the most benefit that you should be able to get as a player when you come out and nominate if you're out of contract, is that the club should just deal with that because you're not in contract. But in this scenario, clubs have shown that they are able to hold players, especially with 2 years left on the contract. And I mean, look, I think it's the right thing to do by Essendon. I thought Essendon would do the trade because Josh Dunkley is what they need.
Yeah.
But if you look at it from a different perspective and you say what Essendon actually need is a rebuild, then they don't need Dunkley, they need picks. And they're more likely to get good picks by using picks this year, and they'll finish lower on the ladder without Dunkley. Even though he's only one player, he is what they need to start winning more games. They'll get lower picks and they'll go to the draft again. So it was a fine no trade. I didn't like the public commitment of it.
So here's the flip side of that public commitment, and it's probably what Essendon would say, is that Essendon's made the approach. Dunkley's obviously interested, and then the Bulldogs are going, well, we're not trading a contracted player when Essendon's approached them. He's got to tell us he wants out. And then for Josh to be able to control that narrative rather than have the Bulldogs in the box seat with it, he actually does have to come out publicly and say it. And I think that's where it gets complicated, because if he doesn't come out publicly, then the Dogs can sit there and go, well, we haven't got a trade request. They might have, but publicly they don't have to admit that. So it's a really fascinating one for me. I'll be interested to see if more players do this or not. What I think it will mean is that next time an Essendon approach, or it's not an Essendon, a club approaches an in-contract player, if I was that in-contract player and the manager, I would be asking, do you have the capital to get this done?
Yeah, exactly. Are you really going to get this done or not? How willing are you to prove that this is actually going to happen? Yeah. It's not just you're just using it as leverage.
Yeah.
No, I totally agree. Yeah. And I mean, there's a whole lot of trades during this trade period that I wish didn't get done, but did. But that was one that I was fine with not getting done. The next one on our list was Adam Treloar. We said that he was worth the highest pick from the Dogs, plus some cash compensation from the Pies. And that would have got the trade done.
Yeah.
We did get that. So, I mean, I don't know if we included any other words to the effect of nothing else matters except for that. But I think Collingwood took that to heart, and they listened to the episode and they're like, all right, we just have to go get 14. So the trade was pretty terrible. It was Adam Treloar, 26, 33, 42.
So 26 and 33 are what you got for Stevenson and R2.
Yep. For 14 and the Western Bulldogs future second round pick. So it values Adam Treloar if that pick's worth 30, so Western Bulldogs just make finals.
Finish sixth,
then or seventh, I think that is. That ends up being about pick 64's value for Treloar. And I think we're also paying some of his contract. So look,
wicked deal, mate.
We can cover off... let's just... Because we are running a little bit out of time. So let's cover off the Pies the Pies trades right now. The other one was Tom Phillips for 65.
That's a cash dump, yep.
We said 45 would have got it done. So 65, that's another 20 picks in the favour of the Hawks. Good work, Hawks.
Yeah, that's a real cash dump, that one.
Stevenson was probably the one that hurt the most. So that was Jaden Stevenson, R2, and pick 39 for 26, 33, and 70, which values R2 and Jaden Stevenson at pick 21. We had Stevenson valued at pick 11 because he's a talented young player. And did definitely hurt to see that he wasn't really in the loop of why this was all happening. And it sort of took him a bit by surprise. There was a lot of stuff to do with that that sort of makes the blood boil a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, we can touch on it in a minute. We can run through these a bit quicker. But effectively, the net result is you traded Treloar, Stevenson, and R2 with pick 42. And you got pick 14 and the 2021 Western Bulldogs second round pick as your compensation. So, yeah. And pick 65 if you throw Phillips in there, just to try and lift it up a little bit. But effectively, you've traded out two best 22 players. Phillips, arguably on the fringe, and you've got a young developing player in R2 there. So you've given away four players for not what I would consider reasonable compensation. And, you know, as you mentioned, you're probably contributing a decent chunk of Treloar's contract value. So, I mean, there's not really a lower grade than an F or a zero or anything to rate the trade period, but I think the Pies are at the bottom of the list.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, they definitely, I mean, regardless of even the result, the way that it was handled was an F.
Yeah, I want to come back to that.
I think the... I did hear one person sort of comment on it saying that the Pies went nuclear. And he wasn't saying it as like an entirely negative thing. He was just saying that if you're going to go down one path, like if the path is to blow it up, why not go nuclear and completely blow it up? Like if the solution is dump cap, then dump it all, like as in clear out all of your bad contracts at once. And if all of these were bad contracts, even though some of them were with really good players, then there's the element that we don't see, which is the dollars in all of this and what was freed up. We know that it was a lot, but Collingwood's still probably paying some of these contract values. So it's not a justification for any of it. It is just the unknown element in it all, is that how bad a position were they in? And if you took that into account at the start of the period and went and said, they're in a terrible position because of decisions made before now. So based on the decisions made during this period, were they reasonable? And we just don't know that. I mean, I don't feel like they still were. I feel like we probably could have done some other stuff to avoid this, but that's the big unknown in AFL, is being able to understand why the cap position is the way it is.
I have no... I mean, if we want to get into it now, we can, but I have no issues in a club doing what the Pies did to clear out space. What I have an issue with is when you like we said, the silence was deafening. Yeah. So we've got all this stuff drip-feeding through the media, and then publicly we've got players commenting and you're getting no response from the club. And your president's sitting on breakfast radio every morning saying nothing about it. And, you know... I think the response was, you know, we will not be commenting on this. And then you've got, you know, after the trade period ends, your list boss comes out and says, oh, it was only a small part of it, the salary cap. And then, you know, Bucks says, oh, the, you know, X, Y, and Z. And then, you know, 2-3 days later, all of a sudden it all comes out. It is cap. Of course it is. Be honest. Don't treat people like idiots. The problem when you blow up a list like this, and it's what we said, I think, with St Kilda when they did it in 2013, and it wasn't until Peltrin came out, you know, a few years later, everyone went, oh, that's why it all happened. You know, be honest with people. We're not silly. Like, if you want your fans on board, tell them, okay, look, we're just not going to get to where we need to get to if we don't jettison some of these contracts. We've put ourselves in this position. Yes, we've staffed up, but we now have to turn over these contracts.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is that publicly you're admitting that you've stuffed up and you're not throwing these players to the wolves.
No, you're completely right, because what you're coming out and saying is, if the alternative is that we breach the salary cap, which makes us not an eligible team for the AFL, we probably lose our draft picks for the next two seasons if we're found to be knowingly breaching the cap. And probably these players will have to be delisted anyway because we'll have to make room for it and they'll be picked up by other clubs, as will the contracts. So this is why we have to do it, and it's not good. And we take full responsibility for the fact that this is a mistake in our management or previous management. But it's not the fault of the players. It's everything else. And we wish them all the best, and we'll try to do our best by them. But
yeah. And like they kept saying, it was about negotiating. Well, the cat was out of the bag. You weren't negotiating with anyone. The Western Bulldogs clearly showed that you had no leverage at that table.
Yeah.
And, you know, so to sit there publicly and say, well, we couldn't admit to it. It's like, well, you could, because the cat was out of the bag. Once the cat's out of the bag, it doesn't get back in it. So
yeah. Yeah,
everyone
knew that.
I just thought it was such a poor read from Collingwood. Such a poor look. And I really do feel sorry for player supporters like yourself, mate. And to be honest, like, I think a lot of our chat groups have been pretty held reserved in their commentary around it, for the reason that, you know, it would suck to be a player supporter at the moment.
Yeah, I reckon it's one of the first times player supporters have had real sympathy, because people are like, I would fucking hate that to happen to my club. I've already dropped the F-bomb once this episode. I can re-bring it out again. I would hate that to happen to my club. And that's sort of what's happened, is that some of my favourite players, Phillips wasn't one of them. He definitely grew on me in his better years. But Adam Treloar was probably one of my favourite players in the competition, let alone at Collingwood. And Jaden Stevenson was as exciting as they are to watch, as they can be to watch. So it was really disappointing. I'm going to move on to some other less disappointing things so that I can get over it. Jai Caldwell, our final verdict was 7 and a 2021 third for Caldwell, and a 2021 second. So that would value him at pick 10. The actual trade was 29 and Essendon's 2021 second, which we're projecting to be about 22, for Caldwell, 44 and 74, which values him at about pick 15. I mean, that's fine. It's reasonable value in the situation. I know GWS weren't happy in the end, but you just got to value second round picks higher.
I am enjoying seeing a bit more, we'll call it passion, out of the list bosses. I enjoyed the clip is
McCartney.
Jason McCartney, yeah, like he gave to Dodoro. I enjoyed the fact that Paul Brasher, the new president at Essendon, gave it back. I don't mind seeing clubs have a little bit of a dip publicly, because, you know, I can appreciate Essendon's position. They held a hard line, and good on them. And it's the same with the Dunkley. They did hold their line and they stuck true to it. But it's okay for other sides to be unhappy at you. It's okay to be hated.
The problem with all of this is that because there's so much of this going on in all directions, every one of these club managers or list managers has done the exact same thing in reverse to another club, so that comes out very quickly. You just seem like a hypocrite because it happened to you. And that's true. What happened here is they're just being hypocritical. Same thing happened with Jackson Hatley, who ended up just walking to the preseason draft. They said that the offer wasn't there. It's like, that's fine, except he's going to walk to the preseason draft. Do you know what you do? Suck it up and take pick 40.
Oh yeah, it's a real tough one.
It's not though. Like, the clock expires. You're sitting there. You've got an offer. It's pick 40. You can choose pick 40 or try and negotiate a contract.
I think there's a bigger picture to this, and I think it's to get rid of the preseason draft.
Yeah.
So I think definitely. I think that GWS has potentially taken one for the team, to put pressure on the AFL to get rid of the preseason draft, because it's a joke. A player of Jackson Hatley, like, we all agree that Adelaide's rumoured offer, which was a pick in the 40s, I think it was pick 40, was the offer.
Yep.
Is a bit of an insult for a player of his stature.
Yep.
And the fact that they had a mechanism where they could basically hold all the cards at the table because of the preseason draft, it was just fundamentally, you know...
Yeah, it was wrong. It was wrong. The fact that the preseason draft exists and a player that is not a free agent doesn't have to re-enter the draft, where he can be selected by anyone, which would be a better mechanism, is better, because then at least, at the very least, the Crows have to pay. So the Crows might have to pay probably at the latest, and I think you would go before this, at the latest 22, which means that they would just trade that pick to make sure that they secured him. So that creates a much fairer system. Totally agree. Well, look, we're past most of the parts of the off season now. There's still the draft and a couple of delisted free agents period, but we're going to do a proper off season review of rules and systems and structures as well, where we can come back to all of this.
Moving on to the Raz then.
Yeah, Orazio, we were pretty close on this one. We were close on it. So it was 29 and 59 for Fantasia, and 67 was our suggestion. Ended up being Fantasia and 73, not 67. And for 29 and a future third, which we're projecting to be about 50. So it values Faz a little bit higher than what we had him at. We had him valued at pick 26. This values him at pick 20, which is probably a little bit overs. But for the situation, which is Port Adelaide trying to win games right now,
it's a good move.
It's a good move. It's a good move for both parties.
Yeah. Jack Higgins. So our final verdict on this was pick 17 and a 2021 third going to Richmond, which we valued at pick 49. For Higgins, pick 36 and a 2021 fourth, which was 72 for Richmond. That valued Higgins out at about pick 24. The actual trade was Higgins, pick 21, and Richmond's 2021 fourth, which is pick 72, for 17, and St Kilda's 2021 second round pick, which is projected at 31 for us at the moment, which values him at about pick 26. So we're pretty damn close on that one.
Yeah, I mean, that one, we had it as their second round pick with a future third. And what ended up happening was their St Kilda's first round pick being involved and a higher pick going back to St Kilda at 2022nd, coming back to Richmond, sorry. So we didn't project that Richmond's first round pick 21 would be involved in the trade, which is sort of what threw the value there. But I mean, same.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, we're trying to compare the overall value to what the value we'd kind of suggested there. So
yeah.
Look, Alex Witherden, we had valued as a future second, being from West Coast. The future second, I think you said, John, there it would. Where are they on our list? Fourth. So that future second would
Have been 33.
The actual trade was Witherden and 86. 86 holds no point value. For 58 and West Coast's 2021 third, which
we're projecting to be 47. So the actual pick value ends up being 37, which is
that should be pick 50, so around 50.
Yeah, okay. So it ends up being
38 or something.
37 or 38, which is start of third round rather than end of second round.
Yeah, so I mean, we're a little bit off there. It's a bargain buy for Witherden. So, you know, we kind of said in the podcast that, you know, if this was a scenario where he'd played a full season like last year, he's probably valued up in the teens. So he's had another one that's had probably close to a 20 pick drop. Off the back of not being played really this year, a bit like Ben Brown. So although he wasn't publicly pushed out, I'm imagining there's a lot of list spot pressure on at Brisbane, I think, this year as well. So
yeah, and the remaining things were just pick swaps, both of which the D's were involved with. So the first one was 31 and 43 from the D's moving to the Swans for pick 25. So the Swans picking up points to match their academy players, and the D's moving up in the draft order. They did the same thing with the Lions, which was effectively just the Lions not wanting to use many picks in this draft. So they gave up their 20, D's gave up their 2021 first, pick 25, which is that pick they just acquired, 68 and 69 for pick 18 and 19, and Brisbane Lions 2020 second round pick, which we're projecting to be about 33. So that's a win of about the same points that they lost in the Swans trade, a win coming back to the D's. And I think all in all, it's probably a pretty good trade few picks for the D's. I think that it works for all parties. The Lions get into the future, which is where they wanted to be. The Swans get more points this year, and the D's get two more picks this year, and a good pick for next year as well. The 33 will end up being a valuable pick for them. So those pick swaps are just all... Well, they're fine. No losses there. And just to wrap up the episode, because I do need to finish up now, those estimated picks were projected on the ladder, and the ladder is really at this stage largely projected upon how the ladder went this year. So, but it's sort of broken it into groupings where I've got 1, 2, and 3 being Richmond, Geelong, and Brisbane, but those three teams being the three most proven performers. So they don't necessarily have to finish in that order or all in the top three, but I expect that all those teams will definitely make the top eight. West Coast, St Kilda, Port Adelaide, then the Western Bulldogs being between 4, 5, 6, and 7. In that order at the moment is my projection. But again, those are the teams that I think will make the eight but may not. The teams that are fighting for the eight but I think won't make it, there's only one spot available, is GWS, Melbourne, and Collingwood. That probably extends down. I've probably been a little bit harsh on a couple of teams that are fighting around there.
Carlton,
maybe the Hawks, maybe Fremantle. Like, there's a lot of teams in that middle, but
I think Carlton's probably the one trying to join, and maybe potentially Gold Coast.
Yeah, Carlton without what's his name again? Without Curno, not Ed Curno, his brother Charlie. I don't know how much they step up, but the rest of the ladder goes from 11 goes Gold Coast, Carlton, Fremantle, Hawks, Essendon, North Melbourne, Sydney, Adelaide. So we didn't have North Melbourne on the bottom like a lot of people are forecasting. I still see Adelaide being down there and the Swans, but realistically, it's not forecasting a whole lot of changes. It's just a slight shuffle based on what we saw during the period. But
yeah,
we will do probably a better forecast come bigger forecast come the preseason as well.
Yeah, I think once all this washes out and they've done the national draft, we'll do our usual post-season wrap-up and everything. But yeah, I mean, look, I think probably the tone of this episode from John is probably just get this done, not only for time pressure, but also because he doesn't want to think about what the Pies gave up. But it'll be good when I think the next club up might be the Pies for the list analysis, so...
Yep.
We'll probably talk about the hot mess in that one. But yeah, it's been a really fascinating trade period, and there's a lot of backstories and stuff that have gone on. And, you know, you kind of wish the coverage was a bit better because it had a lot in it this year. It's probably one of the more exciting trade periods I've seen. And especially the last 5 minutes where... probably Ken Wood got smashed with about 30 emails. But yeah, so overall, I think there's some big winners and some big losers from the year. And you know, probably the biggest winner has been the Dogs pushing into that likely to make the eight group, as John's identified, and Collingwood probably falling out of it. So I guess that's probably about a wrap-up for us, mate.
That's about it, mate. Take us home.
Yeah, so just so everyone knows what's coming up, we've obviously got, I think, about 6 list reviews to do, which we'll get through over the next few weeks. But probably the bigger news to get everyone excited about is we'll be doing our what's now become, I guess, an annual mock draft with the Draft Central boys again. So that's very exciting for us. We love doing that every year. They always blow us away with their knowledge of the draft. And I think this year is going to be really, really important for us to have a bit of a listen to them, because they've watched this year probably a lot closer than we've been able to. So yeah, that's pretty exciting. That'll be coming up in...
It's the next episode that we'll be recording after this one. So you guys, it's the next episode. We'll be recording that one on the 27th or the 26th, I think. So you should expect that about a week before the draft. It should be dropped.
Yep, perfect. And then we'll just hit with a few list reviews, and we'll definitely do a good draft review at the end. So plenty of exciting content coming up. It's all coming through thick and fast now, at the end of the season being crunched. But We hope you've enjoyed listening, and hopefully your club did well. And if not, guys.
If you're a Collingwood supporter, you can come and cry with me. Enjoy, guys. We'll obviously chat to you all in the next couple of weeks. But have a safe couple of weeks, and we'll chat to you soon.
Yeah, stay safe, guys. See ya.
If you constantly worry that the worst is going to happen, you're not alone. 1 in 4 Australians will experience anxiety. Know when anxiety is talking. Visit Beyond Blue to start a life beyond anxiety.